It's me. It's the D-O-double-G, the road dog, Jesse James. And by my side, as always, is that B-A-double-D-A double crooked letter badass Billy Gunn. Together we are the New Age Outlaws. And you're listening to the VOC Nation. And if you ain't down with that, he's got two words for you. Suck it.
VOC Nation provides live daily streaming shows where fans have the ability to interact with the host and guests by phone call, email, and Twitter. VOC Nation hosts include the legendary Ken Resnick, who you probably remember from the AWA and WWE, former WCW performer The Maestro, Wes Briscoe, who you probably remember from Impact, Brady Hicks, who you remember from Pro Wrestling Illustrated, former WWE and TNA star Shelly Martinez, and former Philly radio personality Bruce Wirt. VOC Nation's two most popular shows are Wrestling with History, featuring Ken Resnick and Bruce Wirt, streaming live on Wednesday nights at 9:30 Eastern, and of course, In the Room, featuring Pro Wrestling Illustrated's Brady Hicks and WCW alum The Maestro. And by the way, both of these shows take callers live during the show. What are you waiting for? Go listen live right now at VOCNation.com and subscribe to all of our podcasts by searching for VOC Nation Radio Network on your favorite podcast app. Oh, and follow them on Twitter, too, at VOC Nation.
And welcome to Wrestling with Problems. I'm your host, King David Lane. That's King David Lane on just about every social media platform. So give me a like, follow, a friend request, and I will most likely give you one in return. And I'm here rolling solo for the moment, talking wrestling and problems. The biggest problem in wrestling and in the world in general largely has been the COVID-19 issues, and we have a sad announcement to make regarding a death of a former wrestler. Although he was a little bit more prominent in the mixed martial arts world, Paul Varlins has passed away from issues related to COVID. He was a big pioneer in the early days of USC, but he also wrestled in ECW. He fought Taz famously in a, I'll just put Max in quotation marks, because it was supposed to be a shoot fight, but according to people, it was actually, you know, it was booked, so it was a work. So he did what Bam Bam Bigelow might describe as, quote, cooperating. Unrelated to that, I've just been watching ECW late 97, early 98 lately, so Bam Bam Bigelow talking about cooperation and fights where MMA guys, quote, fought wrestlers was big in my mind. So the cooperation thing came in there. If you don't know what I'm talking about, tune into some ECW on WWE Network circa late 97, early 98, and you'll get what I'm talking about. Triple threat, Bam Bam Bigelow's issues with Shane Douglas. And I'm enjoying that era of ECW for the first time, because I gradually worked my way through ECW's hardcore TV that is on the network. Actually, fun fact, since it takes me about a week usually to watch an episode, because I watch it a few minutes here and there, you want to do part of my workout early in the morning, it'll probably end up taking me longer to watch the entire ECW hardcore TV catalog than it took ECW to exist in its entirety for the whole time. Because I think I'm like now about roughly 4 years in ECW, and I think I've been watching it now for about 4 years. But anyway, back to the original topic. Like I said, there's issues with COVID in wrestling right now, is just as there is in the entire world. Nyla Rose has been pulled due to contract tracing and, you know, quarantine and whatnot. As far as I know, last I checked, she had not tested positive. However, she is, you know, quarantining and staying away from other people to make sure that she does not spread it in case she does indeed have it. We wish her the best and hope that she's not COVID positive. But in the meantime, as far as the television aspects, she won't be on this week's Dynamite. There was a report that there's some changes do have to be made to the show for that reason. So we wish her the best. But going back to the Paul Varlins, I guess we'll get into a little bit of his career and some of his impact on the world of wrestling, since he did have that that brief run in ECW back in the day. I guess we'll just sort of start off with a little bit of a introduction into some of the things he did. I do want to thank MMA Junkies for some of the information I've got regarding him and his death, among other sources. But I guess I'll just go ahead and, you know, just dive right into that. He was actually born September 17th, 1969. He passed away January 16th, 2021. He appeared both in UFC and ECW, as I mentioned, as Ultimate Fighting Championship, 95 to 96, Extreme Championship Wrestling, 1996. Attended West Valley High School in Fairbanks, Alaska, and San Jose State University. He was a football player and actually boxed there as well. He actually made his UFC debut in Ultimate Fighting Championship number 6, which was titled as well Clash of the Titans. His overall mixed martial arts record was 9-9. He had 9 wins, obviously 9 losses, 6 knockout wins, 2 submission wins, 1 decision win, 7 knockout losses, 1 submission, and 1 decision loss. And that's per SureDog, which handles, you know, some of the MMA stats. It was the ECW's Hardcore Heaven, June 22nd, 1996, where he was in a, quote, shoot fight between himself and Taz. Like I mentioned earlier, it was promoted as a legitimate fight, but he did agree to cooperate. He's also on a few house shows as well, defeating Jason Helton. He also had a one-night appearance in for Kingdom in Japan, where he, which was a wrestling association there back in the 90s. He ended up losing to Yoji Anjo. It was first reported last month that he had contracted COVID and he struggled with it for a while. He ended up passing away from it, like we mentioned, on January 16th. He was 51 years old. He also fought on UFC 7, UFC 8. Fought for International Fighting Championship as well. So if you were like into the UFC early on, I must admit I followed it a little bit early on. You know, Brian Hunter, who was a co-host, he actually had a bunch of the videotapes back in the day, so I used to actually watch them with him sometimes back in the 90s. I was not quote a hardcore fan, as far as, you know, reading a lot of articles and being in the internet MMA community or whatnot, but I did enjoy watching it. I love the novelty to the early MMA fights, where it was pretty much just ball back then, one-night tournaments. Pretty much whoever showed up, they would fight, they'd have a tournament, and whoever won. I kind of missed that aspect of it, to the UFC. I mean, the current thing where they have, you know, weight divisions and stuff like that, that's fine. But I really miss having just a sort of all-comers, whoever shows up fights, regardless of size. You know, I kind of miss that aspect to it as well. I wish... If nothing else, either UFC would bring that back for one night a year, or some other, you know, upstart MMA promoter would at least do that. You know, just once a year have a tournament where whoever won that tournament could legitimately call himself the baddest man in the world, or baddest woman too, because like I said, they should definitely have a women's division of that too. Because I think that's something that never actually happened. I don't remember UFC didn't even have women until around the Ronda Rousey era, roughly. After she had been like sort of doing it and sort of dominating it for a couple years, Dana White finally decided to bring the women in. I don't think there are any prominent, super prominent, like UFC-style tournaments back in the day for women. That's not to say that they didn't have women in mixed martial art fighters. It's just... And then it's not like they didn't even have a prominent division, prominent Ronda Rousey. UFC didn't have it. But I don't think the UFC style tournament where just, you know, the old school where the man just showed up regardless of side, regardless of style. You have a sumo wrestler fighting a little person or whatever other ridiculousness might happen. You might have a 170-pound guy fighting a 400-pound guy. I don't think they had that version of it with the women as far as I know. If you beg to differ, you have some proof otherwise, please send me a link. You can send it to at VLC Nation on Twitter or send it to at King David Lane on Twitter. I would love to, you know, like I said, I always love learning things because that's very, very important. Knowledge is very important. Always stay learning. I am a very knowledgeable person, but I'll be the first to admit as well. I don't know everything. I know a lot of things. I don't know everything. And the other beautiful part about when you learn a lot of stuff, you also tend to forget a lot of stuff too. All kinds of stuff that I've been watching wrestling now for, let's see, it's been what, 35 years now? Somewhere in that neighborhood. Even stuff from like the my childhood that I watched, that I had to have watched, I don't remember sometimes. I do have, you know, a certain knowledge of other stuff, but there's a lot of stuff I've forgotten. Sometimes I'll look back on, you know, gimmicks and stuff that I've forgotten about. I was like, I don't remember that at all. I know I was watching wrestling and I don't remember that. Although a lot of that stuff, forgotten for good reason. Like, I don't remember Akeem African Dream from the first time around. And I'm certainly glad that I forgot that. But at any rate, a little bit more information about Paul. He was 6'8", 300 pounds. He was nicknamed a polar bear. he was a fan favorite. He had been put in a medically induced coma at Emory University Hospital in Atlanta. And a few days after the family's final update to his condition, UFC co-founder and Hall of Famer Art Davey announced he was on respirator in a coma. There had been hope, but he did take a turn from worse. He was 70% breathing on his own at one point, but eventually it just sort of overwhelmed him, according to J.E. Snowden of the Official MMA Encyclopedia. Otherwise, just like a sort of a rough thing. Like I said, when I say luckily, I'm putting that in quotation marks because there's really nothing lucky about the whole COVID situation. But luckily, wrestling has not been affected by that many deaths. Baseball seems to be kind of hard hit, particularly among their Hall of Famers, having a lot of people die from it. COVID's mostly just been like sort of situation where most people who've sort of gotten it or been exposed to it haven't had the most serious conditions, at least not as far as hospitalization. As we mentioned last week, one of the Young Bucks had it and actually lost a sense of taste, and he felt tired and wore down, but as far as we know, he was not hospitalized. Jericho had it for a while. As far as I know, he was not hospitalized, but he mentioned it did, you know, definitely make him feel different. Mentioned earlier in this episode, Nyla Rose's exposure to it, but hopefully she's not tested positive. It's last I checked, so hopefully that will continue. There's been, like, you know, others in wrestling. Michelle McCool indicated that she tested positive for it, but nobody else in the house. And obviously, if you're a wrestling fan, you probably know that The Undertaker is a husband. He, as well as their daughter, have not tested positive for it as of, you know, last I checked, last time I checked, that was probably yesterday or day before. I'm pretty sure if Undertaker had tested positive or his daughter had tested positive, it would have been pretty big in the news. So I don't think that has happened. But again, this is a one-man outfit, so I try not to Google too much when I'm doing the show. I try to stay on topic unless it's something I absolutely positively need to know in the moment. But yeah, it's a rough time. So our thoughts go out to his family and to his friends and anybody that, you know, was close in his life. And like I say, may he rest in peace. There's no real good way to transition from, you know, a death of a beloved figure within MMA and within wrestling. So I'm not even going to really try to transition properly because there's no way to really do it, but I'll do the best I can. I want to, you know, take a little bit of a more lighthearted story, although, you know, this could be serious business. This could be like something long term that actually goes a little bit more serious. But Blue Demon Jr., former NWA World Heavyweight Champion, big time luchador in Mexico, he's actually running for the mayor in a Mexico City locale, not the actual Mexico City proper, but a Mexico City is being referred to as a municipality. Gustavo A. Madero. His party is called Redes Sociales Progresistas, which would translate in English to Progressive Social Network. Basically, he's trying to become the mayor. He's indicated he wanted to focus on matters like education, security, economics. For those of you that just sort of casually follow Mexican wrestling and luchadors, he is a masked wrestler. Masked wrestlers do not display their face publicly. Technically, if he did win, he would have to display his face to the members of the council and other certain government officials. But since that would not technically be public, it would, you know, cover him as far as that goes. It is forbidden in Lucha Libre culture to reveal one's real name and face the public under any circumstance. Honoring his heritage, Blue Demon Jr. hopes to run for mayor without taking off his mask, revealing his identity. He explained that he would only have to identify himself in front of authorities and not to the public. And I, also, by the way, I want to thank SD Scoops for the information. This is on Anuisha Nag, who provided the information for this particular article. He's apparently not the first masked wrestler to run for office, though. Apparently, I was not aware the great Sasuke in Japan had become the first masked wrestler to serve in politics. He was actually a legislator in his local assembly back in the day. He did actually display his real name. His real name is Masanori Murakawa. So he actually, I'm not sure if he ran under the great Sasuke or if he ran under his real name. I could look that up right now and find out, but I actually prefer not knowing. This is a rare case where I'm choosing ignorance just because it's fun to think that he just ran under the great Sasuke. So I'm not usually a big fan of willful ignorance, but this is the one rare case where I will make the exception where willful ignorance is kind of fun in this case. Blue Demon Jr., by the way, is the adopted son of a legendary luchador Blue Demon. He's the first Mexican and the only the second masked wrestler to be the NWA champion. So, and he does still wrestle to some degree. He had his bigger runs with Lucha Libre AAA Worldwide from 96 to 2001, and he returned there in 2013. He still actually wrestles on occasion. So, actually, that would be interesting to have the mayor. I actually would like to see him win and be the mayor and at some point wrestle Kane or, who's the other mayor? Matt Morgan. Yeah, Matt Morgan is the other mayor. Actually, three-way dance, mayor fight. Although Kane, I think, is still under contract to WWE. Matt Morgan, I don't think, is under contract anywhere at the moment, so I'm not sure how logistically you could make this work. But, you know, you got all these federations of wrestling working together, you know. WWE needs to get on the action. Have a mirror fight. Anyway, best of luck to him. Does seem like he wants to work on some nice issues, although, you know, in politics in general, most people seem like they want to campaign on nice issues. It's not like somebody says, I'm going to burn the city down. I'm going to kill everybody. I want the poor to stay poor. I want the rich to get richer. Nobody campaigns on that. So you never know what people want. I'm not trying to say he would do that. I'm just saying in general, nobody campaigns on a bad platform. Everybody wants to help people, and that's why they get into politics, theoretically and as far as campaign practices work. Anyway, moving on to other topics in the world of wrestling. Impact had their Hard to Kill pay-per-view, which I have not watched yet, so I won't discuss in detail. However, I did want to talk about one part in particular that one of the participants was not happy about. And it's also, it's always kind of weird, you know, when there's so many, quote, pay-per-view events happening with so much of the world of wrestling being pre-taped now, as opposed to traditionally, you think at least pay-per-views are normally live. But apparently, you know, they did do a taping for at least for his match. Ethan Page fought Karate Man, who was also technically one of his alter egos, even though they, quote, don't really acknowledge it. Well, he doesn't acknowledge it on TV. Pretty much everybody is kind of a wink, wink, nudge, nudge sort of situation if you watch Impact. But he doesn't acknowledge it, but pretty much everybody else is willing to point it out. Anyway, he created it on YouTube, and eventually it did come on television. He left the company before the pay-per-view, and they aired the match after he left. He wanted to be a sort of cinematic-style match of wrestling, sort of like the Final Deletion. Whereas they went for a more Mortal Kombat-inspired video, and he was not happy about it. These are quotes from him. "But man, last night sucked. I'm so embarrassed with how Impact lazily edited to save me last night and forced it to be a joke. I felt the thought of the same guys fighting each other was comedy enough, and the more serious we took it, the better the reaction would be. But because I left the company, lied to my face, and just did what they wanted the whole time. I'm sorry if any of my fans paid for the pay-per-view and felt cheated. I used to feel the free version I gave away was made with more love, care, and attention to detail." The actual presentation from Impact had Ethan Page appear in front of a green screen and cut cheesy lines, while the spectacle had humorous moments. Page was absolutely livid that he didn't even get to look at the footage before it aired. So I'm looking at just one screen cap from it right now. I was hoping to like sort of watch it before I came on air. Unfortunately, you know, I do have a day job and I have roughly an hour between my day job ending to sort of get home, set up for the show, at least try to be somewhat professional. So I didn't have a chance to watch the video yet. But just looking at the screen cap, it definitely kind of looked like the best technology you could have took from Mortal Kombat, the original version from back from the 90s. And maybe the CGI you probably could have did 10 years ago with it. But like I said, obviously that's a screen cap. I have not watched the full video yet. So maybe it looks better in person, but I'm doubting it. But it definitely looks like this one beater they're showing, he's wearing a t-shirt and jeans fighting him, his Karate Man gimmick. And there's some sort of green lightning ball or flash as they try to punch each other. So I do not have high hopes for this, but I would at least give it a chance. I have not watched it yet. I'll give it a chance, and I will report back later on next week's show about my findings. At any rate, Ethan Page is a free agent, so doesn't look like he'll be signing back with Impact. And since Impact works at AEW now, it doesn't look like he might want to go there either. The writer for SC Scoops expects he'll be in NXT soon, but you know, we'll see how that goes. That's Jake Jeremy, who reported he thinks he'll be in NXT. So anyway, let's move on to some other thoughts on the world of wrestling. We got the big time WrestleMania announcements have been made over the last few days. The Hall of Fame induction ceremony got postponed last year. They moved WrestleMania from the Raymond James Stadium to eventually they moved it to the Performance Center. They didn't have the 2020 Hall of Fame ceremony at all. So WWE did make some announcements regarding the next three WrestleManias. This year's is actually going to take place over two nights at Raymond James Stadium in Tampa Bay. WrestleMania is going to be in Dallas next year. It's going to be in LA 2023. There will be, you know, more announcements and more details coming further. But they also haven't announced what's going to go on with the 2021 Hall of Fame induction. It's possible that they might just induct the 2020 class this year and do it virtually. Regardless, the plan is for the Hall of Fame induction class to be held virtually regardless. But it still hasn't been announced whether or not they're just going to induct last year's class or they're going to just do a new class or maybe just do both virtually. But just to remind you from last year, Batista, NWO, Hogan, Nash, Hall, X-Pac, or I'm trying to think, was he with, they put Sean Waltman, but I guess he was six in when he was in NWO. So later he became, you know, X-Pac, but he was when he went back to WWE, he's going by a variety of names. But anyway, the Bella Twins, Bri and Nikki, JBL, John Bradshaw Layfield, and Jushin Thunder Liger were parts of last year's class that didn't get a proper induction. So if nothing else, maybe they'll just do sort of back-to-back, you know, classes this year. Because I do want everybody, if they do multiple classes this year, I want to make sure both sets do get their proper due. And with the network, if they don't want to air it on broadcast TV, there's always ways for WWE to do it. Besides, WWE will want that extra content. Actually, this would be another thing where you could probably use the Thunderdome for it anyway, I guess. Now that I think about it. If you really, quote, want to get fans there, if you can't, it's probably not the best idea to have fans in a, you know, indoor arena. I think Raymond James Stadium might be a little bit too big to try to pull out the sort of Thunderdome thing, you know, as far as trying to put screens there and whatnot. But you never know. They might come up with some good idea between now and then. But at any rate, overall, it's just sort of interesting. We're going to go ahead and take a commercial break really fast. But you're listening to Wrestling With Problems. And we'll be back in just a bit. So don't touch the imaginary dial. Because it's not real.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called Pie: People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcast, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Hey, this is Total Package, Lex Luger, and you're listening to the VOC Nation. Don't miss out.
Check out In the Room
every Tuesday night at 9. Listen in.
Pro Wrestling Illustrated's Brady Hicks, former WCW star Stro Maestro, Cassie Fist, Matt Grimm.
And you and Ray are there too, right, Ray?
We sure are, and we've got great guests like Lex Luger, AJ Styles, Taku, and more. It's a heck of a party. Plus,
I didn't get thrown off buildings.
And then
I didn't get pregnant either.
Sometimes I think it gets so ridiculous.
We were getting into like snuff film territory there.
In the Room.
9 p.m. Eastern on VOC Nation.
Wrestling with History, the voice of choice, and Killer Can Resume.
When I die, they're going to open me up and find about 2,000 undigested Northwest Airlines cheese omelets.
Mr. Chris Cruz, what's going on?
Jesus, how did I get roped into this?
General Adnan went to school with Saddam Hussein.
He cried, I cried, he cried, and who could have cried?
Adnan lost a lot of family in the Iraqi war.
Everybody loves Granny.
Wow. Yeah, see, a lot of people don't know that.
Yes, Taylor, you guys are busting me up.
Catch Wrestling with History with Ken Resnick and I live on VOCNation.com Wednesday nights at 9:30 Eastern Time, or listen to the podcast by searching VOC Nation Radio Network on your favorite podcast app.
Stadium Journey, the worldwide leader in stadium reviews for the traveling sports fan, is proud to present the Stadium Journey podcast on VOC Nation. Join us as we talk with prominent figures from around the sports world to discuss issues pertaining to sports travel and stadiums around the globe. New episodes air on VOC Nation Wednesdays at 6 p.m. Join Paul Baker, Dave Cartney, Mark Viquez, Dan Calachico, and guests from throughout the sports world on the Stadium Journey podcast on VOC Nation.
Each and every Thursday night, check it out. WCW star Stro Maestro takes you on a journey. It's WCW Retro. Talking old school match of the week, talking dream matches, taking your calls and looking back on an incredible career of acting, entertaining, and wrestling. Check it out, VOCNation.com, WCW Retro. Be sure to call in Thursday nights, 9 Eastern, on the VOC Nation Radio Network.
Yo, this is Jerry Stein of the Nasty Boys. Yeah, Brian Knobs here. You getting ready to get nasty? Well, listen to the VOC Nation, baby, because it's about to get nasty all around and up in this mother. Get ready. Nasty Sensation is coming at you.
The worldwide leader in entertainment. This is the VOC Nation Radio Network.
And welcome back to Wrestling with Problems. I'm your host, King David Lane. That's King David Lane on just about every social media platform. So give me a like, follow my friend, because I'll get you returned. And also like and follow King David Comedy. That's Comedy with a K on most major social media platforms as well. You know, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, you know, the main ones. So definitely check me out there as well. I got to get some shameless self-promotion out of the way before I bring in our second man in the booth this week. He's offering the third man or second man in the booth, but we're going to bring him in just a second. But I got to get some shameless promotion out of the way first. Don't forget to hit that like and subscribe buttons on our various videos. VOC Nation does have a YouTube channel, so please subscribe to that. We're starting to produce more content on that. We kind of took a break from that a little bit, but Bill After is now part of the VOC Nation family, so he's going to be producing a lot of content for that as well. I think Bruce is going to be getting back into it as well. And I literally had forgot we had the channel. So I realized I didn't even know we had the channel, but I realized I must have known at some point because I've actually posted videos to it, although they were 6 or 7 years ago. But still, we're excited to have Bill after part of the family. He's definitely going to get that growing and humming for us. So definitely like that. Please like, subscribe, and review the show on iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you are. Consume your podcast content, because even though we are a live radio show, we do this every Monday, 5 o'clock Central, 6 o'clock Eastern, it's 3 o'clock Pacific, 4 o'clock Mountain. We do it live, so you can call in. If you call in 914-338-1885, again, that's 914-338-85, you can call in and check us out. But if you're listening to it like most people do on podcasts, on a cell phone or while you do your jog and whatnot, please subscribe to VOC Nation's channel on Stitcher and get your latest updates there. And like I said, please leave us a 5-star review because that really helps us out. That helps us get exposed to more people, helps us raise more money, and it helps us, you know, keep the lights on because we've been doing this for a while. And Bruce subsidized it very, very heavily in previous incarnations. So hopefully we're getting that straightened out now, but we don't want him to have to go and do that again. So definitely check us out there. And like I said, if you want to help the show out, Wrestling Problems shirt is available on Pro Wrestling Tees, so definitely get your shirt. If you want the link for that shirt, you can, all you have to do is just go to my Twitter account at King David Lane. It is pinned to the top of the profile. So if you want your Wrestling with Problems shirt, you can see me. You can see my dog Grumpy in the picture as well. But go to the top of my Twitter feed, and you can see it. That's Pro Wrestling Tees. .com/wrestlingwithproblems is the link. There's some dashes in there, but it's much easier if you just go directly to my King David Lane profile on Twitter and just click the link. Very, very easy. It'll take you right to it. So get your shirt. Help us out. And again, leave a 5-star review for us. It helps us out. Anyway, now we're going to go ahead and actually get back to some of the wrestling/problems content that you really, really enjoy. I'm going to bring to the show my co-host, The Brock, at Brock Hunter. That's at Brock Biz on Twitter, at BrockBZA on Twitter. Brian, how's it going? And Brian has dropped off the show just that quick. That's perfect. He was literally on hold for 20 minutes, and then he dropped off right when I went to him. So that's perfect. that's pretty much the 20s decade in a nutshell. You get excited for stuff, and then it goes away. So if he's not back in the next couple seconds, I'm just going to go ahead and end the show because I've talked about everything I want to talk about. So he's got a couple seconds to check in, but if he's not here in a couple seconds, I was going to hang up and end it. But no, he's here. So I'm bringing him back to the show once again. Brian Hunter at Brock Wiz on Twitter. How's it going, Brian?
Sorry about the difficulty, King. How's it going? Wrestling with Problem Nation. And happy MLK Day.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely have a happy Martin Luther King Jr. Day. Like I said, we try not to get to politics too much unless we do our Too Many Black Guys segment, which I don't have scheduled for this week. But this is definitely a time we definitely could take a lot of lessons from what he did living in this particular time in the world. So in this particular time in the country, too. So but anyway, we're going to stick to the wrestling, so we're going to move on. Let's go ahead and talk about some of the things you wanted to talk about. So you did send me some messages about things you wanted to talk about. So I guess I'll start off with Cesaro, because he's definitely been an underutilized talent, and this has been talked about for a while, but every now and again, it's nice to bring it back. What do you think they should do with Cesaro that they haven't been doing?
Okay. Actually, have him win the Royal Rumble, and he actually deserved a main event spot, and he actually deserves to win the title, because out of all the people who you would not have seen to win the any WWE title in the past 10 years, Jinder Mahal was number one, who I did not see getting the title within the last 10 years. Now, I could think of three others, but that's besides the point, though. But Cesaro will be in that top 10 list of people I would have never seen in the WWE ever winning any type of world title. Him, along with Shinsuke Nakamura, which we can probably get on him on another time, though. But plain and simple, okay, his boy Shinsuke got robbed. Okay, so what you do is, okay, we already know that Kevin Owens still not going to win the title, but Kevin Owens get injured or taken out by Jimmy and Jey Uso. So Adam Pearce has to have a suitable replacement and everything. So so how you gonna set it up is, okay, he wins the Royal Rumble, and then he faced Roman Reigns the same night. He runs the gauntlet. He beats Roman Reigns. He wins the title. He finally gets the big push that he never had, or they never continue to give to me.
Wait. Let me make sure I'm hearing this properly. You're saying he should win the Royal Rumble and win the title the same night?
Yes.
Yeah, but how would they make that work? Because you don't normally, when you win the Royal Rumble, you don't get your title shot the same night. So how do they make that make sense?
This is what I'm saying. Okay, you go. Okay, now Jimmy and Jey Uso takes out Kevin Owens before the big title match, and Pierce says that that Kevin Owens is not isn't able to compete. So Shinsuke says that, okay, I got robbed. I should be in line for the title shot. I got screwed. Okay, Cesaro stands up and says, no, but I won the Royal Rumble. I want to face him tonight. Forget WrestleMania. I want it now. I want my title now. That would be kind of messed up and everything. Now, to play into WrestleMania and everything, okay, now Shinsuke feel that his best friend screwed him over and everything, and not giving him the title shot. He figured, hey, I got screwed. I was supposed to get this and everything. So what winds up happening is, still trying to play the good friend. But then what winds up happening is that Paul Heyman gets into Shinsuke's ear saying that, hey, although what we did to you, okay, probably wasn't right, but it was business. Now, but what he did to you was personal because this is a free who did this. What we did to you was business. And then he gets in his ear the same way he got into Apollo Crews' ear. So then what winds up happening is, it turns into a three-way at WrestleMania, Roman Reigns versus Shinsuke Nakamura versus Cesaro for the title. Now, of course, Cesaro still wins it, but he pins Shinsuke.
Okay, I got you.
You can play out the rest of it any way you want. Like a rematch and then Shinsuke takes the pin again. Then Roman Reigns wins back the title and everything, or Reigns takes the pin. The pinfall, and Shinsuke wins the title. But for some reason, I don't believe that Vince would ever give Shinsuke the world title at any point. I think best case scenario, he'll be a tag champion, he'll be a U.S. champ, he'll be an IC champ, but he'll never be a world champ because he got the whole language barrier thing that's playing against him. And Asuka is barely getting by. And I'm gonna see that she gonna drop the title to either Charlotte or Bianca Belair.
Yeah, I would say Asuka, if for the people that matters to, and I think Vince is one of those people. Asuka's much better on the mic as far as relating to the American fan than Shinsuke Nakamura is. Shinsuke, I like his character and I think it's good enough. Although I probably don't speak for quote the casual mainstream fan that's not the more hardcore fan that we are, so the language barrier is not a problem for me at all because you know he communicates a little bit in English. He doesn't cut long promos. Asuka, on the other hand, while she does do some longer promos and stuff, she just has a sort of force of her will. She'll like cut the promo. It'll be partly in English. It'll be partly in Japanese. But it's just so crazy. And it just works for her. Nakamura doesn't have that right. Same sort of vibe when he cuts his promo. So Asuka's able to get away with it a lot better than he is as far as, sort of making up for it, even though English is not either their first language. But Asuka is working for her. She's able to pull it off. And she just says some of the most hilarious shit sometimes.
Hey.
Like I say, she was like the sexy muscle friends. I was like, I assume she came up with that for that name for that tag team for Mandy Rose and Dana Brooke. But sexy muscle friends, that was one of the funniest things I've heard in wrestling. That's up there with some of the
actually that was kids. actually the sexy muscle friends was funny. I'm not gonna lie, I did forget about that, but I do remember when I heard it, I was laughing my butt off. That was funny.
Yeah, I was like I said, in comedy, there's different degrees of quote funny. There's I think it was Seinfeld who came up with this, but it's a very good judge of comedy. Like there's making your friends laugh, that's one degree of funny. There's making strangers laugh, that's another degree of funny. But even better than that is making people talk like you. People repeat your jokes and repeat your slang and stuff like that. That's how you know you really truly made it. And like I said, I just couldn't stop repeating that the first night I heard it. Sexy muscle friends. So that shows you the force of her will and the force of her personality and whatnot. So I wouldn't mind Cesaro getting one of the major title runs. I just don't see it happening now. And they've sort of ruined his character to the degree where he couldn't be above a upper mid card guy right now just because of the way they handle it. If they wanted to give him the world title, that's like a project where they need to start now and maybe build towards it next year, next year's Royal Rumble, next year's WrestleMania.
Okay.
I don't think they could credibly build him up with what they've done with him so far to give him the title, by WrestleMania.
Nah, so go ahead do that then.
They could do some of the stuff that you mentioned. I just think they need to build him up with more wins because they haven't had him winning enough over the last, the last couple years.
Okay.
He's a credible tag team wrestler now with pretty much whoever you put him with to be a threat.
Right.
But he's not a legitimate contender for the world title right now. And it takes a while to build somebody up to that. So you're not going to be able to do that in 3 months. It's 6 months minimum.
Okay,
you have to have him
dominate
the mid-card for a while, then maybe win a couple main event matches, and then you move him up if you want them to have a real legitimate credibility long-term. So that's how you do it. Like I said, they could do all the stuff you mentioned is some good stuff, but I just don't think it works credibly for this WrestleMania with how they treated it in the last few years.
I'm not saying for WrestleMania. I'm saying just –
No, I'm talking about
okay.
Between now. Like I said, because your original idea was Royal Rumble. I was like, they can't do it. Well, I'm not saying – let me tell you, it's not that they can't. It doesn't make sense as far as how they build this character up. It would be like – it makes sense sometimes to hot shot a guy to the top if he's a new, fresh, young guy that you think has, like, this great future, somebody like a Brock Lesnar, somebody like a Randy Orton, okay. Those guys, you could think, okay, I'm hot shot. They're cutting the line a little bit. But it works for them because you figure they're going to have a long-term future over the next 10 to 15 years. Cesaro's not the guy that's going to have the, quote, long-term future for 10 to 15 years. He's not a young guy by any stretch. So if you want to build him up right, you can't just sort of hotshot him out of nowhere to the top. I don't think it would work. And I don't think the fans would give him the credibility that he would have without doing sort of more of a long-term build and letting him build up to it.
Okay. I guess my question is, okay, just building him up to get and win the world title, how do you do it?
Like I said, you can literally do the same thing that you mentioned, but I want to have him to have a nice, consistent winning streak at minimum 4 months, but probably closer to six. So if they want to do that, have them start off around SummerSlam this year, building up to the sort of thing you said, but do the same stuff that you said, but build it up. If they want to build it up to Royal Rumble, next year's Royal Rumble. Start building them up around after SummerSlam. Have them getting, first have them getting, mid-card wins. Then after about 2 months, have them getting, wins over other main event guys or guys that have been in main event very, very recently. And I'm not talking about cheap wins. I'm talking about clean wins where you're like, okay, I'm impressed by what he did. Have him beat a Kevin Owens clean. Have him beat, have him beat even if you want to have him face Roman Reigns, have him beat Jey Uso clean without, even if he has to overcome great odds to do it. Have him beat those guys. Have him beat, a Sheamus. Have him beat, guys that have been world. Have him beat Daniel Bryan. Have him beat former champions that help his credibility. And
okay.
Then
how many former world champions will he have to be for enough people to say, okay, he's at least credible enough in his clean wins that he deserved to be next in line?
I would say three would probably be great, but at least two. Like I said, if you could have him beat like a Daniel Bryan and have him beat have him beat Kevin Owens first, and then have him beat Daniel Bryan second. And when I say beat, I don't just mean on Raw or SmackDown. I mean have him beat him on a major pay per view. That looking at the pay per view, we're like, okay, these guys are fighting to sort of be the next guy in line, and you have him beat those guys. That then he moves up. You sort of move up in the quote rankings that WWE that does not have because they're not AEW. But if you have him beat two former world champions. At least, preferably three, but at least two, you can say, okay, because you started off, like I said, you have them beat some mid-cards, build up a nice long streak, then have them beat a couple of former world champions two to three world former world champions on his way to the Royal Rumble, then you could do everything that you said for this year's Royal Rumble. Just do it at the next one.
Okay. If I'm doing Shinsuke, it's two ways that I can see it going. Okay. Now I like your way. Myself, I'm seeing Shinsuke where at least have to be Jeff Hardy, AJ Styles, and I can easily see him beating Daniel Bryan Shinsuke on SmackDown, right? So AJ would be AJ and Daniel Bryan would be the first two, but here's the twist though. If he actually pins Roman Reigns in a six man tag team match for a tag team match, and Cesaro would just get the pin, a nice clean pin off of Roman Reigns. Okay, now all eyes are on him, that's leading to let's just go with the Royal Rumble. Shinsuke takes the Royal Rumble for the second time, and he's number one contender, no doubt. WrestleMania right there. And then he just mowing through people left and right, and then he finally gets the victory that he had been waiting for pretty much all his wrestling career. WrestleMania, he takes the pin against Roman Reigns after he laid out Jimmy and Jey Uso, and he laid out Paul Heyman.
Okay, like I said, if you do it that way, you can make it work. Like I said, same thing though. I don't think it worked this year, but for next year, it could work if they build it up properly. So,
right.
And I just want to be clear. I'm a huge fan of Shinsuke Nakamura. I thought when he first came in at WWE, they did a good job with his character. I just felt like the last few years they have not done a good job with his character. So I think this problem isn't quite as long term because he hasn't been in WWE quite as long as Cesaro's been without, you know, sort of getting the top belt. But it's the same problem. You know, it's like, okay, they started him off well, but they haven't continued his momentum. And if you're in a company long enough where you're mid-card and you never reach above the mid-card, it's sort of hard to take you seriously as a champion unless you have that strong build-up. So I think he's having a little bit of the same issue, although his trajectory is not quite the same just because Cesaro's been there longer. But anyway, we're going to move on to the last two topics of the evening because we got to discuss those things. You wanted to talk about the AEW Impact working relationship, so I'm going to go ahead and throw the floor to you. What are your thoughts on it? Are you still enjoying it, or has it taken a step back for you, or how are you doing it?
Actually, it's kind of like a two-edged sword. I am enjoying the working relationship that they have and everything, but my only thing is that some of the talent as far as Impact is going to is somewhat lacking and everything, because it's like this, AEW is the stronger brand. Impact for pretty much what the last 10 years been up and down on life support. Is that a fair assessment?
Probably closer to 20 if you think about it, but yeah.
True. Now what I mean by life support is, one, it seems like every couple years we don't know if they're gonna have a new television deal or if they're gonna have one at all. I cannot tell you how many TV deals that they had within the last 10 years. It been those many. I know at least been four.
Let's see, I'm going. There's Spike. There's Destination America. There's Access TV and there's Pop. So I would say, yeah, four.
Okay. Now, that's a lot for most wrestling companies. Okay. Even in the days of WCW, they had one. WWE for years was strictly USA. Then they branched off to Spike for a little bit. Then they did that. Okay, then it's pretty much what back to USA, went to Fox. Okay, not too bad. But my whole point is though that Impact is pretty much like trying to do something to keep them relevant and everything, and that's what I do like about it and everything. I do believe Kenny Omega is going to be a double champion. And I think I think for Impact that may work for your top tier talent and everything, but not as far as your up and coming talent. Now my question to you is, okay, do you believe that the up and coming talent will benefit from this working relationship?
AEW's upcoming talent, Impact's up-and-coming talent, or both?
Both.
Like, I don't remember if you were on the show last week, because I did discuss this last week a little bit, but I think everybody benefits from this relationship. I felt initially when I first saw that it was happening, I felt Impact benefited way more than AEW did, just because AEW has such higher exposure and higher ratings. AEW's ratings some weeks might have been 8 to 10 times as high as Impact's in the initial ratings, and who knows how much more if you look at the plus threes or the plus seven ratings. But one of the actually was in an AEW Nation Facebook group. And one of the fans goes by the name of Shaddy Shadrack. I can't remember his last name off the top of my head, but those are the first two names he goes by. He mentioned that he lives in South Africa. And in South Africa, and that applies to other countries as well, but we forget that Impact Wrestling has a huge reach in like other countries that AEW doesn't have. AEW is almost exclusive to America. Impact Wrestling has huge deals in India. The AEW basically has almost no presence in South Africa. Impact Wrestling used to outdraw like Raw in Europe. I don't know if that's still the case, but that just shows you how big their impact was in international markets. So AEW is getting all this rub with the international relationship, while Impact's getting the rub with the the domestic market. So AEW stars are being exposed internationally. Now, obviously, Young Bucks, Kenny Omega, Chris Jericho, they're all huge international stars already due to their other relationships with like New Japan and some of the other companies they work for. But a Darby Allin, Darby Allin's a star within AEW, but do people across the world know Darby Allin? Probably not.
Probably not.
If he shows up there in Impact Wrestling, that's definitely a huge benefit to him. Sammy Guevara, another young cat, same thing. AEW fans know him, but is he known internationally? Probably not.
In Mexico. Maybe.
Yeah. But like I said, so the young stars of AEW get a huge international bump/rub from this relationship with Impact. Whereas on the other hand, same thing applies. The young stars on Impact might have a decent presence internationally. But when there's only 100,000 to 200,000 people watching your product on a weekly basis, the Impact Wrestling fans know who you are, but you have almost no chance for any sort of crossover appeal in America if you're only being seen by that many people. You might be the most talented person in the world. Wrestling fans in general might know who you are, but if you want to sort of create your opportunities outside of wrestling, because most wrestlers out there now are actually looking towards that. It used to be, I think, wrestlers were just focused on wrestling, and then, they would wrestle for 20 years, maybe 25 years if they were lucky. And then maybe they, you know, at least at the top levels, they might wrestle the indies a little bit on the weekends or something after they sort of get past their primes. But a lot more, they're going to try to do reality shows. They're going to try to go to Hollywood. They're going to try to, you know, find these other ways to make revenue. And those other opportunities within America will definitely be enhanced if they get more national exposure, the AEW being on the TNT network as opposed to just access television will help them out. So this is a relationship that is way more mutually beneficial both to the management and the companies and also talent as well than I initially thought. So, yes, I think this will help both sets of talents, whether it be the especially the young cats as well, because they don't have the long-term, you know, building equity that a lot of some of these long-term stars might have. If you've been a star for years, even if you're an impact now with the Lord's Versus, people still know who you are. People know who the Good Brothers are. So even though they're being seen a little bit less prior to the AEW relationship, people still know who they are. So if they were to come back on WWE TV, they were to go back to New Japan, people know who they are. Whereas some of the younger roster members, that's not the case for them. So that's my thought on it. Do you have any more thoughts on it, or do you want to move on to the last topic?
We can move on to the last topic.
Okay. Last but not least, like I said, we're both fans of MLW, so I know you had some MLW thoughts that you wanted to put out there, so I'm going to go ahead and leave the floor to you on that. What are your thoughts? What did you want to discuss in particular?
I'll be honest. I was surprised that the about the Von Erichs in the tag team title run. I like the Von Erichs, and I think they eventually is going to be one of the tag teams that people going to say is, you know what, they'll probably be in the discussion for one of the best tag teams of the era. I don't know about all the time, but I could see how at least MLW is running them and everything, that they're going to be like one of the better tag teams of the decade. And I actually like how they actually use some of the other talent as well, especially Team Filthy. I love the theme music. I'm not going to lie to you. I love the theme music.
The fact that he's a big, tough MMA guy and he's wrestling in Daisy Dukes, that's hilarious.
Gene Dukes, yeah. It's like, what the hell?
And not just that, on top of it, though, he's combined the Daisy Duke look with his weird ears and whatnot. So that makes it even more hilarious.
Yeah,
that's a look that you didn't expect to come together.
Nah, but he's one of the few that can pull it off, and I was surprised. I'm like, okay, you know what? Only Tom Lawler could do this. But I actually like how they got actually Team Filthy. To me, I think they better than Contra, actually. I think they actually better put together, though. It's like Contra, they got, one, two. They actually got only three. I won't say they got five people, but you can only point to, Gotch. The world champion, which is Jacob Fatu. And then you got the Black Hand of Contra. So who else are you getting in Contra though? Versus, are you putting them against Team Filthy?
I think they can pretty much go what they got. Like I said, I think with the Contra versus MLW feud, you can kind of find somebody else in the roster, whether you want to put some members of Injustice in there, or there are a lot of different options of what you could do. So I don't think that would be the issue. I wouldn't say there's necessarily any one star that I would want to put in there, but like I said, you could probably put a Low Key in there if you just need somebody to put in there, since he's more of a sort of guy that you're not going to have. He's just sort of another villainous guy that's probably not necessarily hook up with a stable, but it seems like if it came down to it, he's kind of like in Taz. When ECW was feuding with WWF, Taz wasn't, quote, a team player, and I think Loki's not a team player. But when it comes down to it, if it comes down to defending the place where you make your living, where you put the food on your table, I think it's that sort of situation. So Loki could actually be a good guy if they wanted to go that route.
I actually like Loki. Thing is, so as me and you can both agree, he's not the most charismatic on the mic. I think we can both agree with that. But the thing is,
To me, he's solid enough.
He's a great
but
worker.
He's not. He. Nobody's gonna mistake him for The Rock. But he's one of those guys for the gimmick that he does. He's just sort of a workman, tough guy that you just give him 30 seconds on the mic. He gets his message out. He gives a nice, strong, tough message. He's not going to cut a stand-up comedy style promo. He's not going to be The Rock. He's not going to do that. But you give him 30 seconds, he'll do fine in that 30 to 60 seconds. So, and that's all you really need from him.
Okay. Now myself and everything. The one man I've been waiting for, Miz Mortez. That's my dude from way back in Lucha Underground. He was one of my favorite guys though, and I didn't think I would like luchadors like that and everything. When it comes to luchadors, I was more into your more athletic luchadors, not one like Miz Mortez and what was the other guy that they used to always wear the deer antlers? I can't even remember the dude's name to save my life.
Are you talking about the dude that like invaded the Capitol, or are you talking about somebody else?
Nah, he was on Lucha Underground.
Are you talking about King Cuerno, or are you talking about somebody else?
Yeah, him. King Cuerno, yeah. I like him, though.
Oh, yeah, by the way, I believe King Cuerno is the guy that's in NXT now. I always have a hard time remembering. Oh, El Hijo del Fantasma, although he wrestles.
Oh, that's him?
Yeah, he wrestles now as Santos Escobar. I did not know that until like a couple months ago, but yeah, that's him. That's Santos Escobar in NXT.
Nice. But okay, now it's just so funny that you bring up NXT and everything because I was surprised that they put the Rascals in the NXT tag team Dusty Rhodes tournament.
I'm not, but I did not realize that's who, when I saw them file the trademarks for MSK, I didn't realize that's who it was going to be, though. So, also, the third Rascal is currently a free agent. He still could join them, but I only found out this maybe a couple weeks ago, too. The Rascals sort of being a stable, the guys that showed up in MSK now, they've been a tag team for years. The other guy, he just sort of added in later, so they're probably not as close with him. So if he doesn't join them, I mean, they were cool with him and all, but if he doesn't join them for the long term, that's not really a huge thing to them. Yeah, they've been together the whole time, so he just sort of was like the third guy added. So not that he's not talented or anything else. It's just that's sort of the way that the business is. We've been together this whole time. You were cool with us, but if you leave, if you want to go somewhere else, that's on you, But yeah, like unrelated to what we were talking about now, just when earlier you said the Von Erichs could be a tag team of the decade, it just made me think of the decade staple in Ring of Honor. So I had to Google them real fast, and I was like, they don't even mention, wasn't Cedric Alexander part of the stable for a while, or he was, quote, a young boy for them for a minute?
Yeah.
Because they don't even mention that on the Wikipedia page. I'm like, they mentioned Tadarius Thomas, but they don't mention him. So that's weird. But anyway.
Yeah, well.
Like, that seems like I should correct this on Wikipedia, but I don't know enough details off the top of my head because I remember watching it, but I don't remember all the details, so I'm not going to mess with it right now. But if you watch Ring of Honor, please correct that so it's updated properly. you should include Cedric Alexander in that. You know, he should be included in Decade, because that's when I mainly knew the storyline. I mainly knew the storyline where Adam Page and him were both the young boys, and eventually Adam Page was promoted to a full time member. Cedric Alexander said, "I'm out." So that was right. That was actually, I think, not too long before he ended up in the Cruiserweight tournament for WWE, or NXT. But at any rate, that about covers our Wrestling With Problems. You got any final thoughts before we go, man?
Okay. For me, as I always say, I'm all about the indies. You need to support your indie wrestling in these fans and everything. Now, of course, you have your major ones who got television deals, but let's also remember the ones who got YouTube deals like NWA and Gorilla Pro Wrestling, and there's many, many others that's also overseas. So support your indie wrestling.
Absolutely. Like I say, hopefully by the end of the year, we'll be able to go back to actual shows. Obviously, it's been a minute for all of us who have, you know, I'd say most of us, it's been a minute since most of us have been wrestling shows. So us even longer, because I haven't been to a wrestling show even before the pandemic. I don't know if I went to one in all of 2019. So it might be as far as 2017 or 2018, as far as the last time I was actually at a wrestling show. I kind of was a little bit burnt out, at least on the WWE end of it. I was kind of burnt out. But I think once they start having shows back at the full capacity again, I think I'll probably hit up at least a couple shows. I definitely want to hit an AEW show. I will probably go to a WWE show for the first time, probably. I guess at that point, it'll probably be the first time in 4 or 5 years, probably. And I definitely, like I said, so definitely AEW, if MLW's around. And I definitely want to hit some of the major indies in Chicago that I hadn't hit, as well as some of the local indie stuff, like I never did end up getting to a Backbreaker Wrestling show. That's a No Fuss Indiana promotion for anybody listening. It's been a while since I've been an ARW show, which is like another No Fuss Indiana promotion. And if we can get Chris promoting again, I actually would go to his promotion as well. Because like I said, I really enjoy, you know, going to New Wave Wrestling Association. So if Chris, if you're listening, you know, get back in the game, man. Obviously, like I said, be towards later next year or early next year, but definitely want to get back out and start, you know, doing some stuff again. But anyway, you've been listening to Wrestling Problems. Thanks for joining us, and we'll be back next week. So, you know, tune in or something. Really, it really helps us out when you do.
I came looking for booty. I like you, and I want you. Now, we can do this the easy way, or we can do it the hard way. The choice is yours.
Well, I don't think you and I will be doing anything any kind of way.